Okay, sorry, Matt, go ahead.
Okay, welcome to the September 8th Planning Commission meeting. Commissioners present are Matt Cochran, Elena Hughes, Tina Carlson, Colleen Thompson, John Varanth, and I assume alternate Shelley Price Gibson.
She's in the room.
Yeah, Clerk Peg Smith, and I think do we have the ZA on the call or not?
No, not that okay. I'm aware of.
All right, so we have a lot to do tonight, so we're just going to jump right in. First off, will someone make a motion to approve the agenda for tonight?
I will make a motion to approve, but I do have one slight clarification on the community housing forum. Just like to clarify that our goal for tonight should be to approve what we're going to discuss with the town council in October.
Could you repeat that, John? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay, is this better?
Marginally. Is there a volume adjustment you can make?
Yeah.
How's this?
Much better.
Okay. So I said we said your discussion and interim meeting, and I want to clarify that part of that is I think that's gonna be our interim preparation meeting, but we also want to approve tonight something to discuss with the town council in October.
Okay, so just bringing the presentation part into the agenda
right.
For town council.
Yeah, so with that correction, I'll make the motion.
Okay, I'll second it. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Brandt, aye.
Great, thank you. Next, I don't have the date, but we need to approve. I want to make a motion to approve the minutes for the August. What was the date on that, Peg?
11th.
The August 11th Planning Commission meeting.
I'll make a motion to.
I made the motion. I need someone to second it.
I'll second it, Tina Carlson.
Thank you, Tina. And are there any adjustments, comments on that before we vote?
I think Peg has already made the corrections I sent to her.
You can see it on the screen that's highlighted.
Thank you, Peg. All right. So all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye. Tina Carlson, aye.
John Brandt, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. So, Peg, you can throw the regulating fire protection and subdivisions ordinance up. That would be great.
Yes.
And before we go into public hearing, a little context and cliff notes. So let's see the context, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, but the fire issue in subdivisions came up a while back and in town council and was brought to our attention. And then we went in to make a minor amendment within that. And that is what we are having for a public hearing tonight. In order to take back to the town council. John, do you want to give just the, since you've written most of this up, do you want to just give sort of a 3-minute cliff notes of what the intention is behind this?
Okay, this was motivated by some ambiguity in the town's fire ordinance that was brought to up by town council member Jim Catmull. To try to address the issues that he raised, we have a new draft ordinance which makes several changes. It clarifies in the current section 152.041(g)(3), which is fire protection and suppression requirements. All new subdivisions shall be within, and I have currently 400 feet. That's one of the things we asked for comments on, of a fire hydrant. connected to a water supply, which was not clear before.
And that's 400 feet from the boundary, not the residence, correct?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Because on a when we approve a subdivision, we don't know where the house will be. So just to expand on that, the wildland urban code, which the town has adopted, requires a water supply, which is a little bit vague, within 1,000 feet of a dwelling. If you start with a hydrant 400 feet from the lot line, and you have the house on the back of a 5-acre lot, that would be about 1,000 feet. So I think we're certainly consistent with other guidance there. The second provision that's been proposed is that the fire authority, which is actually the better term than fire marshal, may increase the allowable distance from a hydrant based on unbuildable sensitive lands and any legally binding restrictions indicated on the plat. The fire authority may allow alternative fire flow and storage exceptions where may allow alternative fire flow and storage where exceptions in nationally recognized fire codes are applicable. Economic hardship shall not be considered in determining fire protection requirements and new subdivisions. The third one, which was brought up by several people, was an exemption saying that the distance may be waived in the case of subdivisions not requiring construction of new streets that are served only by private driveways or existing streets and creating no more than one additional lot. And this was brought up because a person could, on a single lot, have a house and an ADU and a detached ADU, but if that lot was split and had a house on each lot, it would require a hydrant. So that was being a little inconsistent. Then the draft deletes the current wording, which is being replaced by provision A. It's deleting the current wording and saying, where feasible, the water supply and fire hydrant shall be located within the street right-of-way. Alternative routing may be approved by the fire authority, providing the necessary easement is recorded as part of the plat. So, because the other contradiction was that the fire hydrant spacing, as Elena pointed out, was actually in the street standards, not in the subdivision standards. So that kind of clears that up. So that's the draft that we sort of evolved over 2 months, and that's what we'll be taking to public hearing.
Okay, thank you, John. So I'd like to make a motion to go to public hearing.
Second.
So all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Grant, aye.
All right, so the floor is open for the public to for us to hear your comments on this. I'd like to start with, I know we have one written in comment from Tessa Barkin. I don't know, is she in the audience? Would she like to read her comment or should we have someone do that?
On Zoom, yeah.
I'm here. It's quite long, so I could either read that or like summarize it, whichever would be better for you all.
Either way, Tessa, whichever you think is important.
Okay. I can pull it up.
Can I just interrupt for a second? Peg, Judith Guile and Bill Guile are in the audience now.
And Ray Gardner.
And Tom Hoyt.
Thank you.
Tina, could you say that again?
Tom Hoyt. Okay. I lost track.
Tom Hoyt.
Tell me that again. I couldn't hear it.
Tom Hoyt.
Okay.
Ray Gardner.
Okay.
Judith and Bill Guile.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Are you ready for me to read this?
Please.
Tesla, could you please say your name? All the people speaking, could you say your name first, please?
Yes, Tessa Barkin.
Thank you.
All right. Fire safety is of the utmost importance, but I want us as a town to consider methods to promote fire safety while also taking serious account of the issue of affordable land. In particular, I want to voice my support for passing option C of the ordinance regulating fire protection in subdivisions, which would waive the hydrant requirement for a single lot subdivision. I first want to ask you as a planning commission and town council to look closely at the way affordable land is actually working in town right now. The Planning Commission is planning a housing forum with the commendable intention of listening to the community and providing ideas about how affordable land and housing can work in Boulder. However, the town's residents are already not only speaking, but also acting in ways that demonstrate how land is going to be sold affordably here. And the way that this is currently happening does not have to do with cluster housing or forming land trusts, though I do think these are options we should continue to consider. The ways that young people are getting land is either by buying it together and splitting it, in the case of Elena Hughes and Dylan Geerlings, or more commonly, buying it from another resident who has enough land to either sell an existing lot or break off a lot in a single lot subdivision. As the price of raw land here has skyrocketed, a number of residents with enough land to share have responded in the best way possible, showing enough care for the future of this community to split off land at an undermarket price so that another resident or family can afford to live here. Let's consider how this scenario has happened in the last year. Zoe and Dusty and Everly and Wesley were able to buy land from Donna Jean in this way. Jason and I, at this point, have bought land from Janine. Nick Vincent has been offered land by Anton and Alex, and Andrea and Andy and Shirley and Carmen have been offered land by Jackie. Bill and Elena bought land together with the intention of splitting it. That is 13 of us all together. 13 of us, including the children, or 6 individuals / family units who now either have land or have the potential to have land of our own soon, mostly due to someone selling us a piece of their land. Residents of this place are literally showing the town ways that affordable housing can work. Again, I appreciate the Planning Commission's ambition to consider affordable housing at the forum, but I do feel that the good intentions of that forum would be undermined by passing an ordinance that would mandate a hydrant for a single lot subdivision, thereby blocking the attempts of landowners to break off a piece at an affordable price. In fact, mandating hydrants for single lot subdivisions could potentially block members of our community from their nearly achieved goal of having land of their own. Nick, Andrea, Andy, Shirley, Carmen, and Elena. This affects all of us. This affects the future of our town and who will be able to stay. I'm going to summarize some other points because it's a bit longer. Basically, in the rest of my letter, I suggest a few other options for ways that we can deal with fire mitigation and fire prevention, other than implementing hydrants for single lot subdivisions, because I do think that fire safety is of the utmost importance here. And I do think that hydrants should be required in subdivisions that are larger than one lot. So I asked the Planning Commission to consider fire prevention measures that use other options. I also want to say that a town council member approached me recently about my letter and told me that most of the subdivisions I mentioned aren't actually an issue and wouldn't require a hydrant. And this makes me want to add two things to what I already said. One of them that I wonder if more clarity is needed and if members of the TC, PC, and public are really on the same page in understanding hydrant requirements. And it also makes me want to say that even if hydrant requirements don't end up impacting the specific cases that I mentioned, it doesn't change the fact that there's a clear precedent being set in the last year of young people being able to afford land due to another resident selling them a piece of their land. I'll say it one more time. Housing forums are great, but paying attention to the housing solution that is literally happening is better. There are many ways to reduce fire risk, but there is no way that someone who is already struggling to afford land here will be able to afford the additional price of a hydrant when someone with extra land and the desire to help others offers them a piece of land of their own. Thanks for considering that.
Thank you, Tessa.
Thanks.
Who's next?
Jim Campbell. All right. Seems how I'm the one that kind of started the whole fire protection thing. I think before this gets turned over to the town council, I think we need to call the state fire marshal's office and actually make sure that we're not finding or we're not breaking any of the actual state code that we've been following by trying to figure out if we go 1,000 feet per lot line, because that's not what the code says whatsoever. Code says 600 feet to the nearest point of the building, 400 feet if you're building a shop that you're going to be grinding in, welding in, anything like that. That's 400 feet. 600 feet to the corner of the building. It's not 1,000 feet to the corner of the lot. That is not what the code says. So by trying to pass this like this, it will not. We can't pass it as it sits just for the fact that state code. We can go more restrictive than it. We cannot go less on it.
Okay, by state code, are you specifically referring to which edition of which code?
For the, well, for one, the one we adopted in March, the National Fire Protection Code.
No, you actually adopted the International Fire Code.
Right.
A 2018 edition, International Fire Code. Okay, I just want to be sure we're talking that the problem, and I'm not arguing with you, but the problem is there are two national organizations that publish codes, actually more than that, but the International Code Association of Building Code Officials, those are the international codes. The National Fire Protection Association also publishes codes. In addition, Utah has the Urban Wildland Urban Interface Code, which we've also adopted. So there is often a situation where various codes have somewhat incompatible requirements.
So that's why I'm asking that we should get a hold of the State Fire Marshal's office, have them come down, actually take a look at what we're doing on it. And if they're happy with it, then I'd be happy with it. So, but I mean, that's the only way that I'd feel, because everything I've read for what we're passing on it, that's so.
No, that's a very good suggestion. And I think it's important that those questions be answered. So thank you.
I have lived in rural areas most of my life, and I have talked to you earlier.
Sorry, who's speaking, please?
This is Shelley Price Gibson.
Thank you.
Huh? And in my experience, we have looked at a lot of property. I was in Vernal at one time and out by the book cliffs that we were trying to buy. And the problem with the codes that we are looking at, because there's different codes, but what the loans will consider, and because those codes, and I'm fine, I'm not arguing. I want everybody to be peaceful, get their houses, affordable houses. I love Boulder. I think we should try to find affordable housing. But my concern is that if you are looking at getting loans on that property, you've got to pass the state codes. And if you want to have insurance on it, you have to pass the state's codes. I've already been through it. And you can get property without the state codes in some rural areas, but they're very expensive. There's companies that will give it to you, you know, insurance on your property, but it is very expensive. So to me, I think it's something that these young people that are considering these properties and so on, if they're paying cash and so on, but if they ever want to put a loan on it and so on, you don't want to put them in a bad situation. That's why we exist, is so we don't get a flyer or something that they lose their whole investment. That's Boulder. That's caring about other people. And I hope that we can get through these issues without having any kind of conflict, because I'm not trying to cause one. I know that the fire department isn't, public safety isn't. They want everybody to be safe here in Boulder and to be able to live in their property, and that we can, if problems do exist, which we have seen throughout this country, and it seems like it only gets worse, that they have options to it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Mark Nelson. So I didn't know if I was going to speak on this tonight, but you bring up a good point, and it reminded me of something that years ago, and I think it was spearheaded by Mark Austin, was that we were organizing the fire protection in Boulder is to attain a fire rating, a favorable fire rating from insurance companies. Yeah, and I've forgotten all about that, but you may remember that. Have we looked into that? I mean, do we lose our improved fire rating? Because I know my insurance company gave me a break when we had an improved fire rating. And if we're going to start like doing this type of thing, I'm not sure we might lose our fire rating. So I think that needs to be looked into. Because I just got a letter, I think it was last year, from my insurance company said, you know, are you 500 feet from a fire hydrant? If not, it's going to cost you more. And so does anybody remember, do you remember that, Jimmy or Andy? So do we still have that? Is that still in place? Well, how come we're not talking about that? I mean, that should be an important part of this discussion, I think. Anyway, thank you for reminding me, Shirley. Yeah, thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Mark. Anyone else?
Donna Owen is raising her hand.
Hi, this is Donna Owen. I thought there were others ahead of me, so I was just waiting to hear what everyone had to say. I will just sort of repeat myself, whereas I totally sympathize with anyone who wants to try to buy and live here and loves this place. And I did the same when we were broke and we got fortunate, we moved here. But then I just don't understand the idea how one house that was on a 10 acre, then two houses on a 10 acre, that's one per five, is any more safe than another house next to it on five and another house next to it on five. It just still seems very discriminatory to me. If you're going to require 400 feet for some, you need to do it for all. And that's just the way it should be. Maybe we don't need to require 400 feet and make it inaccessible for everyone. Maybe we do need to look into other ways to make Boulder safe. And the other thing was, if in fact the rule is per house, as Jimmy thinks it might be, then why don't we require fire hydrants with a building permit rather than putting the burden on selling the property with one already? You can put the water in because we need to drink water, but you have to have that before you sell your property. But if you haven't built a house or someone's not even going to build, they're just buying it so that they could have the two pieces and a house on one, why don't you consider requiring hydrants be put in at whatever rate you decide is fair and legal in the building permit rather than before? Just my thoughts. Thank you. And I do also feel like there's some with the fire marshal being able to just say, oh, well, you don't have to, but you can't, you do. I never have liked unfair things. I like a fair playing field. And I would think that if you're going to allow that, there needs to be some clear guidelines. So thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Let's see, Dan Pence.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi. My voice is kind of weird tonight, so I apologize for that. Going off on this thing about fire insurance, how many houses in Boulder are not within 400 feet or 500 feet of a fire hydrant currently. And is that a problem for people getting insurance? We live down in Deer Creek. There's no way we're going to be able to get any kind of fire equipment down here. And as far as I know, the extra insurance that we have to buy is not onerous. I just think that there's a lot of homes in Boulder that are a lot further away from a fire hydrant. And if they're not insured, is that something that's unique to Boulder? Is it that people decide it's not a big deal? Or do they go ahead and buy the extra insurance? That's about all I got right now.
Thank you, Dan. Let's see, Nick Vincent.
Sorry, I was muted. I just wanted to chime in as someone who, will be affected by whatever passes here. Just as someone who, the only opportunity I have to get land is through someone parceling off a lot. So, and I know there's a lot of other people like me who are invested in Boulder, and it'd be a shame to not think this through all the way and limit opportunities for people like myself.
Great. Thank you, Nick.
Yep.
Any other comments?
Can I comment? Well,
get across the numbers on them, dude.
Shirley's going to comment again. I remember his last name. I think it was Mr. Pence that was talking about insurance. I know our insurance, because of all the fire that have been going on in rural areas where there's a lot of trees and so on, our insurance came up to us last year and they were reassessing our property. And we had to say, what are you doing? You know, we're right so far away from a fire hydrant. And they went, oh, okay, we didn't know. They weren't documenting it, but they're redoing it now. Now, Sam and Bonnie Metcalf right next to us just had it this year that they were approached. And you can talk to them about what happened with their insurance. They approached them and they've been with them ever since he was a young kid, this insurance company, and they were going to cancel him. And it really upset him. And he went to the company and said, I've been with you for years and years. And they said, we can't insure you for what we've done it. We're going to raise it. And he thought it was unethical. He ended up canceling. So it is going on. This is a fact. And if it hasn't happened to you yet, it will, because of the area we live in. It's just the way it is. Look at California. I lived in Wrightwood, California. And that was in, 2007 till 2011. And we were evacuated twice. And it was horrible. We did get our animals and we did get out, but not everybody made it. A lot of homes were lost. And it's just devastating. And I wouldn't want anybody to go through where they put their life savings into a home and lose it to fire. And I don't care if you're 10 acres, 5 acres, 1 acre. If your neighbor's house goes up and you don't have some sort of fire protection, yours will be affected, guaranteed. And that's why I say what I do about Boulder. I feel like we are a community of caring about everybody, and I don't want anybody to have that devastation. And you know that we're in it. We're in a fire area. So, and in Wrightwood, there was somebody up in that area that kept setting them. And it's hard to prove and know, and it was hard to investigate them. And you know, one just happened in Salt Lake just lately that was human caused. And this is reality because of the way our society right now is. They might resent the area or something and start it. So just be aware that this is our choices and this is what we live in. And don't put yourself out where you don't have some recourse to it. Thank you for your time again.
Thank you. Let's see. Phoenix, you're on deck.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, this is Phoenix Funky. So just listening in on the discussion, I'm thinking if the problem is really distance from fire hydrants and it's not a problem of new subdivisions, then it probably should be something we should be considering for existing structures as well, as a way, because we don't want the burden of fire protection to only fall on people who are newly purchasing property. Maybe this is something that the town needs to look into more, as working on making hydrants just more available to the general structures, especially if we have a lot of existing structures that aren't compliant, and that's why we're trying to work on getting new structures compliant. I also thought Donna's point about requiring hydrants per buildings rather than per subdivision was probably a good idea.
Thank you.
That was it.
Thanks, Phoenix.
Nick either has his hand up again or I didn't get it lower in the first place.
Since this is still a public hearing, Jim, could you comment a little bit about the grant that Boulder Farmstead got and all the fire hydrants that were put in through that grant? Do you have anything you want to add to Phoenix's comment?
Okay.
Hi, Randy.
Hello, how are you? Randy Catmull. First off, everybody thinks fire hydrants just appear out of nowhere. You can just put one here, put one there, on there. That's not the way they work. On there, you either have the main line to put it there, or there's no fire hydrant. You know, you want to build, but you want somebody else to pay for your infrastructure. On there, your developer pays for his stuff. That's all there is to it. I don't know what the problem is. You want to vote for to have a fire hydrant 1,000 feet away, and your neighbor's house burns down, you vote for it, but how do you feel? How do you feel about that? When your neighbor's house burns down because you didn't think they needed fire hydrants. I don't understand the mentality of this. You know, it's the water company's not going to put in a main line without a fire hydrant again. Plain and simple. And the grant money was what we got for the community. We put fire hydrants in front of houses that don't even belong to the water company. And so that's not like we're this here, you know, the water company provides fire protection for the whole community on there. So now who's supposed to come in and put the other fire hydrants in? Us? No. You guys built the remodeled building, you bought the property, you figure out how to pay for it. Or subdivider comes in, costing $500,000 for private, doing 10 lots. Well, there's $50,000 a lot extra. Figure out what needs your what? How much is your profit? Where's your margin? That's what you got. Not this, oh, I don't want to pay this because it costs me more money. That's not the way it works.
No, I was just, I thought for the benefit of a lot of people here, I remember that you got a very large, it was grants from multiple agencies that paid for the new storage tank and increasing the water line. And maybe you could just remind people when that happened and how much that was and how much grant money the town got. Boulder Farmstead got, which has benefited the town.
Well, first off, you know, I've been on the water board for 25 years on there. And when I first started, when they went on the water system, I said, well, I'll stay on there as long as moving forward and provide a service to the community. And I'm still here, so I must be doing it on there. As far as grant money and stuff, we took a chance in availability through the engineering and design and trying to keep on top of it, going for search and grant money and getting the money to do different projects throughout the year. We probably had over 4 or 5 projects we financed through the years. We're still paying on some of them, most of them. But that all, and what does the town pay for water fire protection to the Boulder Farm set a year? $50 per fire hydrant per year maintenance. And then everybody says the water company should pay for all the stuff? No. The developer pays for the stuff. He wants it. That's the way it is. And I'm not putting a main line anywhere that there's not a fire hydrant on it. If that's required, and the state, they come in for a subdivision, they're going to do a hydraulic model test. They're going to show what the deficiencies are in that system, if there is one, what it's going to take to do that system. And then when they do that, and then they go into plan review, all that gets submitted to DEQ before they can even do anything on there. Then once that happens, and it's all installed, and then they go through and do pass all their tests, then they have to go through and get an operating permit for that line. It's just not like you can just go hook up and we're all done. It just don't work that way. You know, and if we did, I'd be a lot happier. But you know, as far as grant money, if you anybody can go out and get grant money, it's how aggressive you want to be for what you need on there. You know, the water company, we've tried to be aggressive because we knew the needs of the community, what they're coming at. We, you know, I can say we have a 250,000 gallon storage tank subdivision up there. We have three tanks below here. We have with 600,000 gallon storage capacity. We have 150,000 gallon storage capacity for the community, which was pretty good for our size community on there, you know, and a lot of that, you know, is planning for development and through the years on there, you know, but it's we're not financing somebody else's projects on there that, you know, and come to state guidelines, state code, we're not allowed water company or anything else to do something that's not approved by DEQ or anything else. You know, that's just the way the lines go. I can, we can sell connections to hook up any new development or anything. I can do maintenance 100 feet, 150 feet a year or something on there, you know, but after that, you know, my hands are tied. So, anybody like your questions, let's have them.
Well, I'd just like to thank you for everything Boulder Farmstead has done in terms of having the 8-inch water line along the highway and down into Lower Boulder and out into West Boulder. So that was a big improvement in the situation. And you guys took the lead on that.
You know, we did it not to who if they had a share of water or not. You know, the Albertino lives never fire hydrant even down there. One day we had down there, we blowed out lines every 6 months on there forever on there. You know, we had a guy down there, one hookup. After you get it down there, he said, you don't want the hookup anymore. You spend $250,000. Put the system down there. It's on fine. You write a letter, we'll disconnect you totally. You want to come back again, you'll be paying a lot more than you do now. On there, and he says, no, I'll keep it. You know, so that's on there. But that's connections along, you know. It just, the price of water and everything else, it's expensive. By the time we do all of our tests and everything else, it's not easy to try to keep on top. We're not making money. I wish it was. Like we all get paid a little more.
Randy, I know it's not within the town limits, but are there any fire hydrants in the draw?
No.
Yeah.
No, everything down there is on private well.
Yeah.
Pretty much. We service down to the bottom of Sean Owens' house down there, where that is, down here to Ray Nelson. And then we go over here to where the draw part is, right down there at the end. Peter
Kina's. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks for your comments, Randy. Any other comments for the public hearing on this ordinance?
Bill's going to come up.
Bill Guile. I have a question about alternate systems that have been mentioned, but I think we could all use a little education about what's involved in an alternate system, how much water needs to be produced to fight a fire with an alternate system. And I'd like to, if Randy wants to come back up, I'd like to defer to him to answer that because I don't know the answer to that question, but I know it's a lot of water.
Okay. Bill, if you Google NFPA 1142, it'll have more information than you know what to do with.
Right. I know enough to be dangerous here, but I've looked at this once upon a time, and it's not like you can put a small tank on your property and hook a pump to it. It's a tremendous amount of water to be an alternate to what a fire hydrant can do.
I concur with that. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you, if you know, the quote I cited has specific calculation methods for depending on the square footage of the building and the construction materials and so forth. And he's right, it's not easy to design, build a system that complies with that code.
Okay, any other comments?
Doesn't look like it.
All right, okay, I'm going to move to close the public hearing.
I'll second that. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Grant, aye.
Okay, thank you everybody for your comments. Let's see. John, I'm going to turn it over to you to sort of lead us through here.
First, I want to thank everyone. I think these comments are extremely helpful. A lot of different insights, and we really appreciate it. I think this is the way a public hearing should work, that it isn't a shouting match. People are bringing substantive information for consideration. Given what we've heard, I think the best thing to do is that we table any further action on this for now. And I can work with Pete Benson and get this reviewed by people at the state level. And when that report comes back, then we could put it back on the planning agenda.
Okay, and then that would clarify the discrepancy that we have between distance and fire hydrants and so on.
Yeah, I think it's very helpful to go beyond the resources we have in this community and get some additional expert opinion.
Right. Okay.
So the motion would be to table it for any further action tonight.
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
One more comment. Is that something that we could have the town lawyer look at, Mark McGuess? Like, can he look at what we're writing versus the state code that we've adopted?
This is much more a fire marshal decision. He's much more important when you're talking about easements and rights of way and things like that, or compliance with state law. But no,
okay.
The state office is really the one that has the expertise.
Okay. Thanks.
So, unless there's further discussion by the Planning Commission, John, do you want to make a motion on that?
Yeah, so I made a motion to table this pending review by state fire authorities.
And then
And Colleen has seconded it.
Okay, now, are there any final discussions before we go to a vote on that? Comments?
I would like to just include, which will probably be the case, of any preventative measures people can do when building houses and setting up fire protection. It's part
of great. Okay, thanks, Tina. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Barath, aye.
Okay, great. Let's see, moving on to switching gears. What time? 7:44. Okay, we're going to move on to the conceptual plan for the Full Moon Farm subdivision. And I believe that Rod Torgensen is going to be presenting. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Rod, could you give me some heads up on which documents you'd like me to display?
That was for what? Do you have any documents that you want to have her display on the screen?
Is that Peg?
Yeah.
That's Peg. Sorry, yes.
Yeah, we sent those. I don't have any additional.
Okay. I've got your maps and everything ready to go. Just tell me which ones you want to refer to.
Probably the, I wonder if you want to show the document first of the explanation of the project.
Okay, I've got the project description up on the screen right now. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
All right.
I don't know if you want that read or if you just everyone want to read it.
I think the most helpful thing would be to put up the aerial view and just kind of summarize it. Would you?
Okay.
At the conceptual stage, this is mostly to share information and address concerns rather than, you know, doing detail engineering. So perhaps this overview would help.
Okay. Peg, do you want to put up the map that has the aerial overlay?
Okay. Are you seeing that right now?
Yeah.
It's at the edge of the screen. It's not being shared.
It's what?
Not open, really. It's like at the edge of the screen. The
edge of the screen?
It's previewing right now.
Oh. I'm seeing a full screen here. Let me start over. You can keep talking while I'm fiddling around here. Can you see it now?
I do have a full-size paper copy if anyone wants to look at that here.
Probably have to.
And I don't know. I only brought one because I thought that one would be up. But,
it should be up now. Are you seeing it now?
Bring it over and I can.
It's up now.
Thank you. There's a little lag between me putting up the file and you seeing it. So just tell me what you see.
Okay. As you look at the concept here, looking at six lots, total of about 34 acres, lots varying in size from almost 8 to about 14. And there's existing water to all but one of the lots, either connection to Boulder Farmstead or a existing well or application for a well that's been approved, all except the one lot, which I believe the owner is in the process of making application for the additional lot. That you may be interested that on the south end there's some this end towards me is the south end some because of the property location and configuration right now lot number one would be a little bit odd sized with Lower Boulder Road going through it because it goes through the property now. And the property on the west is less than 5 acres. The property east of the Lower Boulder Road would be 5 acres if this concept is approved.
Is that the county shed on the left?
Yes. The county shed is a separate parcel. And one question I had in looking at the town code, the code says that the width of the lot, I'm assuming you're still going by the 2008 code. Is that correct?
The online, we still have the 1-to-3 ratio.
Okay. So, it says the width of the lot needs to be at least 1/3 of the depth of the lot. So my question is the 1/3, is that talking about the distance on the frontage of the property because it says the width of the lot, or is it the width of the lot?
Yeah. The ordinance has something about irregular lots. You know, looking at what you've got there, my interpretation would be that it meets the intent of 1-to-3, but that's something we'd have to look at as a planning commission.
Okay.
Yeah, the we In fact, we had discussed flag loss previously and sort of dropped it without coming to it. And this turns out to be just a perfect example of where allowing a flag lot would make a great deal of sense. So,
Are you talking about?
You've got those two little extensions of lot six on both sides of a separate parcel.
Right. So that was one of the questions, is the width of the lot. If you go back partway in the lot, the width of the lot is more than a third of the depth. So yeah. I didn't see that the code said that width had to be frontage.
And right. I would agree with you that what you've got there meets the intent, but I think there are other questions that will come up with regard to the subdivision. So,
okay. Now, I don't know if PEG can adjust that a little bit, but that's not seeing
the set.
Lot number one. It's only showing part of it.
So to clarify, I think lot one is sort of a triangle at the south end. It's two triangles, one on each side of the road.
Yeah, on here, which part of it is on the east side of the road and part of it's on the west side of the road.
Right.
Because the current property is in that configuration.
That's not uncommon in Boulder.
So that, yes, would be a irregular lot. And I looked at the average width of the lot versus the length, and it meets that requirement.
Yeah.
If you look at that. So I don't know if there's anything else that you want to indicate.
Well, I didn't think you just put a lot with a road in. Yeah, you separated a lot with the road on each side and have one lot. I know it's a continuation of the road right there, but you're trying to take part of the road in as your measurements for these lots. Are you excluding the road out of your?
We're excluding the road out of the area. Yes.
All the lots are accessed on there.
Yes.
If those two
parcels are separated from each other, then that portion on the west side of Lower Boulder Road would be a non-conforming lot.
Oh, okay.
You can't split the sub or lot if the road is put in the middle.
A point of order. This is not a public. This is not a public hearing. We do appreciate questions, though.
I guess my comment here is, it's already the case.
Okay.
We're not.
So, yeah. Are there questions from the Planning Commission for Rod? Comments you want to make?
Okay. Yeah, so, Rod. Okay. You know what I see here. It has some questions like lot six being irregular, and lot one being split. But I think in theory, this, what you've got, could be made approvable. However, it kind of misses a big picture question. And that is that there's an irrigated field, and I think somebody's going to be commenting on that, have some information on the irrigated field, Tina?
Yeah.
You do? Okay, great. And what's being proposed here does nothing to advance our general plan. It really doesn't address housing needs. It doesn't address preservation of agriculture. And what I'd like to do is really urge Rachel and you to work with us and see if you could do something better under the cluster ordinance provision, which allows smaller lots with open space preservation. So that might give you a lot more flexibility to be able to do half-size lots, which would be 2.5 acres, with a large piece there on the east being preserved as irrigated land rather than being chopped up by multiple lot lines. Is that something that the property owner would be willing to consider.
That's an answer. That's a question she needs to answer. Yes. And she was going to.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Oh, very good.
Hi.
Hi, Rachel.
I don't know how to answer that at this moment in time, relative to this drawing. And I don't know that I agree with that my plan doesn't take in those things that you, some of those things that you suggested into account. So I would need to just think about what I heard is that it said that it's like the presumption is I'm not preserving green space, is what I heard. Is that correct?
I guess that would depend on what the future owners do with the land. I think the concern, and Tina will probably discuss this in more detail, is possibly that it would be making it more difficult to irrigate if it's separate parcels. But what I really like to do is encourage you that we're in the process of trying to update our subdivision ordinances as an outcome of the housing forum, that we could probably work together and come up with something that is better for Boulder and more profitable for you if we think creatively, rather than taking the existing lots as they're proposed. And I'm just wondering if you're willing to spend some time working with planning to see if we can come up with something better.
I'm certainly willing to talk about it. Absolutely. I'm not, my plan is not as, it is actually more stewardship driven than profit driven. And so it might be good to sit down and talk about what my thoughts are outside of the concept meeting. And because I'm not just selling these lots, that's not exactly how I have it in my mind. So there's some presumptions that have been made, and stewardship is certainly primary for me. So it would be cool to sit down and talk and see if we can be aligned on that. And if cluster housing is really a fit for this scenario or not. I know that it's there's a need for housing, and not every parcel is going to be a fit for that, or not every piece of land. And I'm open to talking about it.
Yeah. So, Rachel, this is Matt Cochran here. Would you be open to like even having maybe like a field meeting, like a few of the people from the Planning Commission meeting with you and looking at what you have and talking about it?
I think so. I would want to hear more in advance, and then probably yes.
Okay.
Just to understand where you guys are coming from, and even have a little bit more understanding of where I'm coming from, because I'm hearing, you know, presumptions like the idea that the lots are already sold. The presumption is even that I'm selling them, and that there's not going to be stewardship of that pasture. So I think some clarification from both sides before meeting would make it more functional.
Yeah, very much agreed. So can we set that up with you sort of offline then and go from there?
Totally.
Okay.
I will apologize for any presumption. Usually the motivation for subdividing is to sell, but if your aim is stewardship, then definitely I think this is something where some creative thinking would work. I'll point out, over a year and a half ago, Elena brought up the fact that the wording in our ordinance about driveways was causing problems. And when we discussed it, we realized that provision really made no sense. It was a restriction that didn't serve a public purpose. So we went through the process of fixing the ordinance to make something possible because we felt that that's going to be good for the community and every time that situation comes up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we could start with the current cluster ordinance, but also look at what things would have to be adjusted to make a good stewardship project with that beautiful land that you have. I ride my bike past it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is beautiful, and it's really important to me. And I've thought about this for a long time, and with stewardship as the primary focus. And I don't know if it will make sense to accommodate cluster housing in this project, and I'm willing to talk about it.
Yeah, I think the clarification would be really great. So we have more of an understanding of what you're up to. Right now, we're just seeing aerials. So,
yeah.
Maybe Tina, do you want to talk about the irrigation?
Yeah. So this is Tina Carlson, and I was just interested in knowing more about how the land was irrigated. And so I was given sort of the map that you see on the screen right now kind of indicates basically the irrigation that comes through that actually makes the fields green, which obviously it seems to be quite an issue if you actually divide, try and figure out in those divisions how the water is going to continue through all the land without actually making some kind of housing envelopes within those pieces of property in some way. My understanding is the road going through that irrigated land would be difficult to continue to have that access of the water going north to south. So this is just more information about how the land is irrigated at this time. And I don't know, that's just information for you. As far
for me, the landowner? Or who's that for information for?
For the Planning Commission and in as a way of speaking to you about your property.
Okay. Yeah, I'm aware. I'm definitely aware of how it's irrigated, and my intention is to improve how it's irrigated.
Okay.
Rachel, this is Elena. I'm wondering if you might be able to, I feel like now when it's the concept plan, it's a good time to maybe speak to some of what you're talking about, because it sounds like you do have like stewardship intentions with the pasture, and I apologize that there were assumptions that was not your plan. I think often there's an assumption made that subdividing means the death of agricultural land, and I don't think that's always true, and that's something that we've been talking about recently, and I personally would love to hear a bit about your plan now while it's on the public record and while people are here before we come out for the site visit.
Okay. And I'm just kind of curious, not because I'm curious about the difference between what is my responsibility to share as part of this process versus what is goodwill to share because people are concerned. Could anybody help me understand how to parse those out? And not because I'm trying to be secretive, more because I want to really honor the process as it's meant to be.
I don't want to. Okay, I'll try to speak to it. Tia, do you want to say something?
I was just going to say, in my opinion, it's more of an invitation to share and tell the concept, and it might help us help you come up with the best way to move forward with this. Usually we try to get all the information at this concept plan meeting in order to best move forward with the project. It's not required that you tell us all of your plans.
No.
Okay.
I would say the same that, in theory, if anyone who owns land comes up with a plat that meets all the provisions of our ordinance, we really don't have much choice but to approve it. But we have some provisions of the ordinance that can be used to make something better. And in your case, and I think this is the case that we're trying to move to with the whole housing forum and the general plan, is if our ordinances are making people do things that aren't good for the land, and aren't good for the community, we need to change our ordinances. So, I think if you can start sharing a stewardship vision and how the town can advance that, that's going to be providing a template that will apply to other cases where people want to start subdivide, or where people in the future subdivide irrigated productive agricultural land. So, yeah, it's an invitation. I think, you know, we can, there's a couple ways we could move forward. We can either have offline discussions as long as we don't have a quorum of the Planning Commission present, so no more than two planning commissioners present, mm-hmm. or we can have a public meeting out in the, on the ground with the full Planning Commission and the public invited. Both are available to you at your discretion. But I think I'm trying to express on the part of planning that we would love to work with you to see if we can advance open space preservation and still get you what you want.
Okay, and just so, thank you for sharing that. And just so I understand, did you have, can you give me like a little example that would apply to this project where there might, it sounded like you were implying that there could be ordinances that are in place that would, that could be improved. And is that just a general idea that as you go through the these processes, you're looking at possibilities for improvement of the ordinances, or was there something specific you kind of had in mind?
Well, for example, if we're working under the cluster subdivision provisions, it might be possible to deal with the fact that your current lot one is split into two in a better way than what's currently shown. But I think what Lee Nelson has advised us in many times is that we need to give in, we as a town need to give incentives to landowners to do good things. If we're not expecting them to do it entirely out of the goodness of their heart, but we can incentivize doing things that advance the general plan. But I think in this case, I had worked on the presumption that the intention was to sell off six lots.
Right.
If you've got different intentions, you may have even more flexibility. But I think as soon as you put open space preservation in, I think the big one that we need to be adjusting, and I've brought it up before, is the 1-to-3 lot ratio. It doesn't serve a clear public purpose, and it'd be better to modify the ordinance than to have you jump through hoops making very weird-shaped lots to meet a arbitrary rule that we've set. So that would be an example of the sort of thing that we should put into discussion.
Okay, well, that's helpful. There's certainly a lot for me to learn. And I think, you know, just based on what you just said, and there's also, you know, there's opportunity for creativity. I'll make a few comments about my intentions, and then I want to invite people to reach out to me offline, so to speak, and have more discussions, and then we can work our way towards a meeting on the ground. In general, the intention is not to sell off all these lots. It's to have places for family members to be and to keep most of it in the family and to ultimately upgrade the watering system to wheel lines. And just in general, be a good steward of the land and even improve my stewardship, because the wheel lines would be a huge improvement as far as the research that I've done. That's kind of a needed improvement, and it's an expensive one. So that's kind of the basics.
Great. Thank you for sharing that with us. And we'll follow your lead on that and get a hold of you offline and then go from there.
Cool. And there's not going to be houses in the middle of the pasture. So, I mean, I guess that's obvious if there's wheel lines, but just, I think people are having visions of like a pasture full of houses. So
that is a common thing I have.
Yeah.
Also, that the fact that you're preserving the green is great, but there's been many divisions in town where that hasn't happened, and so of course we have concern about what exactly is going to happen. So
that's fair. I've heard about these scenarios, and it's understandable that this would cause concern.
Yeah, you know, I've made this statement before, but I'll make it again. You know, my fear, if you drive through Southwest Colorado and you see all these old historic ranches that have been chopped up into little rectangles with a house in the center of each one. Mm-hmm. And then the land's basically out of production. And I think that's the one thing we don't want to be having happen in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, as soon as you said stewardship, I felt much better. Thank you.
Oh, good. Good. I will say that I don't understand that drawing that you guys put up or whoever put that one up. So I would love it if somebody could email that to me with a little bit of a more explanation with the red circles.
Tina, will you do that?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Tina Carlson will get a hold of you on that.
Okay.
And well, I guess, sorry. Yeah,
What?
I have a couple of comments. Yeah. Rachel, did you have something else first?
No.
Okay. I want to be clear from the beginning that this is not a requirement as part of our subdivision process. This is just a suggestion in what we're talking about. Something that could help give people comfort in the preservation of the open space could be building envelopes on the lots, so that there are only certain spots that can be built on. And then even if those lots do get sold by family down the line or whatever, that still remains the building envelope. The other thing I just would like to say to the commission is that I think that in the future, it might be a good idea for us to fully let the landowner say their piece and their intention before we jump to conclusions and ask them things about their project when we maybe aren't exactly sure what they're doing. I think this was an unusual case because usually the landowner presents and we had Rod presenting for Rachel. So that might have thrown us off a little bit at the beginning. But in general, I think it's best to get someone's intention before we jump to conclusions about it. That's all.
Great, heard. Yeah, and that the whole idea behind a conceptual plan is the concept of it, and it's important for us as a planning commission to understand that and for the landowner to be able to express what is relevant to them about that concept. So any other comments, planning commission, or questions from you, Rachel, before we switch gears here?
No questions for me, just thank you for listening. Thank you for your time.
And thank you.
One quick maybe question.
Could I just make a comment on, you know, we talked a little bit about lot number one, the dividing line there between.
Is that Rod? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, this is Rod. The dividing line between lot one and two is basically a natural dividing line because of the irrigation canal that runs through there. So that's part of what we were thinking about there, but.
Gotcha, noted, yeah.
Go ahead, John.
At some point, either now or at final public comments, I see Tom White kind of like he's ready to jump off. Yeah, but if you could give us some insight into, you know, appropriate ways that planning can work with a landowner when the intention is stewardship, that kind of input might be very welcome.
Okay, thank you. We're going to move on from here. Rachel will be getting a hold of you and working with that. We're about, at least agenda-wise, we're about halfway through. Let's take a 5-minute break till 8:20, and then we'll pick back up again sharp. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to meet you in person. I've seen you all about all sorts of things along the way. Don Moran.
Okay, we're starting the second half here of this September 8th Planning Commission, calling the meeting to order.
I think Tina's going to have to unmute. I can't do it for
Tina, you're going to have to unmute Town Hall. I'm waiting on you to do that.
Okay.
There you go. Okay, great. Thank you. And we're going to move into the Gardner RV Park. So what we're discussing here and trying to give Ray some a way to go forward is an amended CUP application. He's already gotten the CUP for the RV park, which was planned for across the street, Highway 12. And as he has, he'd like to move it to the east side of the highway. And so let's hear from you, Ray, on what your thoughts are behind that, and then we'll give you a way to go forward and what needs to happen.
Ray got up and left. Like he had gotten a call on his beeper.
Hello, Matt, I'm here.
Oh, good.
I'm sorry, Ray. There you go.
Yeah, unless I am on a call, but hopefully it will be uneventful for a few minutes. But so without going into a lot of detail, I'm in the process of buying this property from my siblings. It sits on 7.5 acres, something like that. And it's apparent to me that this has some advantages over my previous location. Mainly it's a flatter area. There's more room, less issues in terms of being close to the highway and the stream. And it, to me, it just seems like a simpler, just more of a natural flow to the design.
Great.
I know the zoning administrators looked at it, and we in the planning commission have reviewed it and feel positive that it is a simpler and a better spot. And I think as far as what needs to happen by, is that, and John, maybe you know the details on this, but in order to do an amended CUP application, what does Ray need to turn in for any sort of paperwork, or do we need to go through the commercial standards, that sort of thing?
Well, okay. We don't have anything in writing that really determines how you amend a CUP when the amendments of this scale. My suggestion is that since we've really already evaluated his project under the commercial standards sheet, he submit what he could call it an amended application, basically discuss the things that he's changing. But I don't see us needing to reevaluate things, you know, when we talked about things like the colors of the buildings and the amount of vegetative screening and that. As long as he's equal or better, I think we can really get through that approval process in quite quickly.
I think by standards that we'd have to have a public hearing, but we could do the public hearing and that sort of amended CUP all in one shot, perhaps next month.
Yeah, Ed, can I ask a quick question? So Ray, if this is 12, did I count that you have 12 spaces right now at this point that you're thinking of?
So Tina, this is just kind of a rough draft. It may be a couple more, it may be a couple less. As you could probably see, it's kind of divided up into two separate stages or phases. Phase one would just be the portion to the north with approximately, you know, half a dozen, six or eight RV spots. You know, my thought was to start pretty modest and see where the demand was. I mean, again, if I do six or eight and I can't fill them, then I'm not interested in building more of the same thing. And so, but I wanted to present, you know, bigger rather than smaller upfront.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I was just, you know, okay, so that's good. So I guess when you did your last one, you had, you just answered all the areas and then that was it, right? You answered the criteria for the...
Yes, I would assume that at the very least I would need to submit a new plot plan, which would basically be what you're looking at now, just in more detail. And correct. Would have some additional things such as, you know, a fence and those types of things. But again, I think this is just a simpler and an easier and I think this plan just makes more sense.
Yeah. I mean, half the infrastructure is there, but I do think, a detailed site plan would be important for the commission to review. And then, like I said, we would need to hold another public hearing on it as well.
Okay.
So I have a question.
Any other requirements? Sorry, Colleen, go ahead.
So the thing about is, I'm not sure when we did your, it was after the first of the year that we did your condition, the permit for this. So if we amend it, does that lessen his time? I mean, I'm not sure why we're amending it or whether we give him, a new one, and he's already gone through it once. He should be able to go through it again a second time so much faster with April, because we went through those standards with him. I mean, I'm not sure I understand about the amended. I do in a way, but I mean, he's moving across the street and.
I guess you're talking about this.
So I have a couple of questions, basically, like the time frame and, it's like we don't have amended, we haven't done amended. I guess that's the thing is I'm not sure what we're doing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think in my mind, the amendment is basically the fact that we're not starting from scratch going through the commercial standards again.
Okay.
If he says that the bathroom's going to look like it did on the other side of the road, already reviewed that. We don't have to discuss it.
Yeah.
You are bringing up a valid point of what I could see calling giving him a new start date on the CUP. That's
I do. I mean, I think that's a good suggestion. That's something I would think about. And to be able to have a better once we've agreed that this is a great plan, then the next step basically is that we'll have a better map. Because this is just conceptual. So that's what we'll have next time, I hope. Maybe.
Yeah, I would think, Ray,
with the hearing.
Yeah.
With the hearing, yeah.
For the hearing, you'll need to replace the documents that have changed substantially.
Sure.
But I think if something's going to be the same as you've done before, you can just stay. You can reference a previous plan and just say it's the same. If it is the same.
Okay.
And Peg, what's the October date for our next meeting?
The October date for the next meeting. Well, the important thing for Ray to know is it needs to be in 14 days before.
Correct.
Into April, so she can review it. Our next meeting is going to be on the 13th of October.
And so in the last day of September is the 30th or the 31st? I can't remember. 30th?
Yeah.
So Ray, you'd have to have your paperwork into April by September 30th for us to be able to review and hold a public hearing for you for the October meeting.
Okay, I'll plan on that for the October meeting then. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
Take care.
Yep. Okay, I know Ray had to bow out there. Any other final comments from the Planning Commission on this plan or this way forward?
No, I think that seeing it before the meeting, we can do our homework and get through that quicker.
Yeah. Half the work's done. So.
Exactly.
And I think as John has said, this is, and Ray, this is a better and clearer plan than the last one with less complications. So there's, so that just makes it easier. Okay, we're going to move on to our last conceptual. I'm looking at my wrong notes here. Okay, so this is conceptual plan next for Deer Ranch subdivision. And the way I want to handle this first off is we have seen, all the paperwork, and I know the commission has reviewed it in depth, I think, John, I'm going to hand it over to you. And before we go into questions, let's get, I know we've come up with sort of some detailed specifics that need to be addressed in order for us to consider it as a preliminary plat and subdivision. And so let's start there.
Do we have anyone from Triglav on Valley Farms here? Either
howdy.
Hey, Sean.
Hey there, Sean. Good.
Hi.
Happy Thursday. Can I? So, John, I know that you have some words that you wanted to say too, and then we got a report from April today. That are you going to bring that up?
The staff report.
Yeah.
That's rolled in.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, John.
All right. So, Sean, welcome. Welcome to our meeting. One of these days, we're going to have to get together on the ground and here in Boulder. What you're proposing is a great idea. The idea of putting the smaller lots along the hillside and preserving the agricultural field is consistent with the general plan goals, and that's exactly what we talked about with Deer Ranch as well. Affordable housing providing or preserving agricultural land. And what you showed us, the 86 pages, I think it's up to now, definitely shows considerable progress. But I wanted to call your attention to that there are some real substantive issues that remain. I think you know what they are, but just for the public record, these include the access easements, the road design, the road maintenance agreement, the water supply, and the details of the open space preservation agreement. But in the interest of the meeting time, I'd recommend that I forward my written remarks to April, and she rolled them into what she had with her staff report, and we send that list to you, and then use the time we have now in the meeting for you to ask any questions you have. And I also wanted to extend a discussion with Matt at whatever time you want to have a on-the-ground meeting with the Planning Commission. We're certainly open to that. I don't want you to ever feel that we're not answering your questions or are not providing information that we should be providing. So I'm open to your comments here, Sean.
Sure. So I think, first and foremost, before I just get into the specific questions, this has been a very long process. I've learned a lot. It was, going down the best intentions here, I think, under affordable housing. I have to tell you that one observation that maybe hasn't been discussed for everybody's benefit is that these lots are not affordable because you have to put in all the infrastructure for half the amount of acreage. So you have to charge the new person buying the lot the difference for the conserved area, right? So it's lot number 14 for the stewardship lot, although I'd say that all of this is in the guidelines and intention of being great stewards of the land. It's a cost that I'm not sure people are aware of. And I think it is counter to, I don't think clusters help with anything related to affordable. I think they drive a higher ticket item price for people that can only afford a smaller amount to build a larger home. And I just want that to be stated, that I've come to a realization that this is the opposite of affordable. So that being said, this being, I think, the third time we've formally put a, set from concept plan to preliminary, I have some questions around just the actual application of a concept and checking the box there versus a preliminary. It is beyond a shadow of a doubt here that I believe the 86 plus pages plus the appendix, which are a couple hundred more pages, is more of a preliminary than a concept. The first question I'd like to clarify that I have not been able to get answered over the last couple months to the understanding that I could, it would be beneficial, would be in ordinance 152.151A, if you'd like to pull that up or if I can screen share, but I'll read it aloud so we're all on the same page. This is the ordinance about open space dedication, ownership, and maintenance. A, open space preservation and protection. all open space areas provided in a cluster subdivision should be identified as a lot and shall be identified as permanently restricted for any future development by a plat note or conservation easement or other method of long-term protection. It is my belief that we have highlighted the stewardship lot and the preserved restricted lot as lot 14 here, open space, agricultural conservation, permanent restriction, and that would count as a lot notation. And I'd just like to know if that is a yes or a no.
Okay, since you asked that, there's another sentence there that our ordinances are far from perfect and they are full of contradictions, I will admit. And we have to work with what we have until we can get things fixed. Yep. But there's another sentence there which says that it has to meet the requirements of the Utah Land Conservation Act, which I think is 50 Utah Code 57-18. I think this is one where my recommendation to planning is that whatever you propose be run by Mark McKipp to see if he feels that that does in fact meet the Utah Land Conservation Act provisions. My yes. understanding of these open space easements, usually they're set up for somebody to get a tax benefit. And I don't know if you've considered that or don't want to do that, but usually they are set up that way. I know that the Utah code requires specifying a duration. If the intention is perpetual, you have to say so. If the duration is 5 years, you have to say so, and we'll decide whether we like it. But that I know is an example of something that's in the Utah code, which is cited by the Boulder code. And I'm not enough of an expert on these things to want to make the final call, but I think I will point out that that's the type of unresolved issue that is sitting there. Does that help?
Maybe. It adds context. I agree with everything you said. We have written a CCNR document that defines all of the provisions of how the maintenance and restriction and ownership and whatnot of this will continue that we believe is to that, which is set forth in UCA 5718, which is listed. The part that causes a lot of anxiety on my side and Kelly's side and all of us that are spending, you know, 40, 50 hours a week to prepare here is without the clarity, it's just anxiety. So, you know, I need some help on, is this going to qualify as a preliminary or not? I don't want to have another preliminary meeting. And so I can go all night, but I don't want to have another preliminary. I'd like to move into a phase where we're checking the items off the box. And this one's just a little unclear.
Okay. To get nomenclature straight, this is a second conceptual discussion, which has no requirement for the application to be complete. It's more informal.
Let's start that up a second because I need clarity. Let's come back to open space. If we look at the application that we worked off for a concept, there are three check boxes: application form, copies of concept plan, and concept plan. I'm starting to not understand why we just keep having concept planning.
Okay, because your document is not complete.
From concept, it is.
No, for a concept, there's no requirement for completeness. For us to send this to preliminary hearing, the zoning administrator needs to determine your application is complete. It's not complete.
Okay, so then I would like to turn it over for you guys to tell me what is not complete and all those concerns. We can go as long as you want.
The burden is on you to prepare a complete application.
Which we believe we have.
We will point out deficiencies. We can, but it is not our burden to help you make it complete. That's your job as a proponent.
I want to just revert here for a second. I'm not being adversarial. I think you made it very clear in the previous section of the meeting that we are all here to work on how to improve the process. Yes. This process has way more problems than you think, and I'm highlighting them for you and some here that I would like help on, where I'm trying to help everybody.
I'll kind of jump ahead to one of my suggestions. As April has said in her staff report, we will want to have an engineer review the final documents. I've also said that in my notes, we want to have the town's attorney review certain aspects to make sure that they meet the law. we can speed up your process by, I guess, mutually agreeing with you that certain things before the whole application is complete, certain things be sent to the town's attorney to get an opinion on what's needed. And I think the open space agreement would be an excellent one to have him look at what you presented and to tell us whether he thinks it is something that meets the requirements. Something else I have to clarify. As a planning commission, our end product is to recommend to the town council whether the application should be approved with conditions, or denied. The town council has the final say.
On the final, yeah.
On approving the subdivision.
Right, meaning there's like the way that it is listed, let's see if we're speaking the same language, on the public website, and what we've been instructed to do for the last 2 years, I've been working on this, 2 years. There are three applications that you get approved. The final is the one that is finally approved by the town council. There's a concept, which has its own application with four check marks, which we've clearly checked the box on many times. Then there's a preliminary, which I have a hard time understanding how you don't go from concept to preliminary when you check the box on concept, but we come back to that. Then there, after preliminary, this is where we vet out all this stuff to get it right, as if it's a final, then the final would have to be approved again, right?
Sean, this is Elena. It definitely is complicated. I'm going through a subdivision myself as well. It's difficult to figure out for sure. I think the reason John's calling it a concept plan still is that until the preliminary application is deemed complete by April, we can't treat it as one and have a public hearing. So it continues to be a concept.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about that point.
Yeah.
You have to understand for framing here, Kelly Cochran, who is on this meeting as well, has spent the last 3+ months working 50 hours a week doing one thing, this application. Okay, so imagine yourself for a second, be human for a minute, and imagine if you had been tasked your entire existence to do one thing. Okay, that's not realistic after month after month after month, and we're still having concepts. Why is it going so slow? I'll tell you, because the communication is broken. It takes a long time. It's emails that we don't get responses to. Okay, it's a problem. And so now we're at the end of the night. We're going to go as long as we have to, but we need to be able to have a process in order to follow a systematic list of from go to A to B to C to D. It's near impossible. I mean, I'm at the point where I think I'm going to have to just opt to sell the whole thing to whoever will buy it, because we're running out of time to do anything.
Okay, Sean, I in a way I appreciate your frustration, but there are a number of very substantive problems with what you have.
From a preliminary, I agree. Let's go through them.
The biggest one is that we cannot consider the plat of your preliminary application if it involves doing changes on land that you do not own. We cannot, as a town, consider a plat that shows a road that goes across somebody else's property until that party has either signed off on the plat or signed a binding agreement that they will sign off once you have done certain things like improving the road.
Right.
That alone is a sufficient barrier to taking this to public hearing.
Right. So that
all the easement agreements in place.
Which I'm still not sure we're talking the same language, because I would agree with you on the public, and I would completely agree that would have to be the process for a final, and you wouldn't want to put it in place before it's final. The thing
that we cannot approve your preliminary plat. In fact, we can't even discuss it officially until they have consented to your water lines going across your neighbor's property and your access road going across property. And I will agree that 1600 South is a mess. I have studied that drawing and I cannot figure out what I can see why the parcels.utah is ambiguous about what's going on there. But that has to be resolved in.
We're not going to fix that road. So we would like to know, let's just talk about the road, because we have all the parties here that do not own that road. If we could talk about it, it's the lower south road.
that we're currently using to enter and exit that was put in before our time that we bought part of the driveway to with an easement that's recorded. The issue, I believe, if we're all tracking, would be that when you go to say that potentially, which again, I would argue it would be the other road owners that would have to say that we're causing some kind of harm with the change of use, because it doesn't seem like anybody else is planning to improve the road that's there. In fact, I would like to turn this around and start saying, well, how come I don't have somebody improving a road maintenance agreement on the road that I'm now having to drive over? But let's assume that we're working to get there. And we're talking about the piece of land that we own, the easement that already exists, the potential change of use and other people signing off that they agree with it. There are some serious issues. I agree with you, what you said. I don't know that they're all getting solved the right way or even going to get solved the right way without having this discussion. Right? It's not going to happen through emails. It's not something I can put on paper and plan because it's not our road. And if other people, you know, we've been, how many weeks in a row are we trying to get on meetings with people? They may not want to have meetings because they might not want to have a road.
That is why we've invited you here tonight and why we extend the offer that we'll have an on-the-ground meeting with you at any time that you want to request one. We can notice a field meeting and have a public meeting out on the property if that will help you. We do want to work with you, but it is very clear your submittal shows a water line going in from the north now because of the hydraulic study.
Yep.
We need an agreement from the owner of that property to put in that water line.
Which we have a draft. We're working through them. It will be there.
When you have that, that's one more thing that can be get you closer to being complete.
That, yes, but for sure.
This 14-lot subdivision has to meet all the street standards in the ordinance. And that, in my mind, means it has to go out to Lower Boulder Road.
The reality here is, just so we're clear, what you said is, I agree with you. The road standard that we have defined here, that's been architected and that is on paper and is should approve, it should be approved. Yes, you agree that the quality of the road that we're saying would be put in meets the standard. The other parties will have to agree now that they're going to have to put a road agreement in to fix up to that standard as well.
Okay.
Right.
If they don't agree, then
it doesn't happen.
Then I think you don't have an approvable application.
Or we get into lawsuits and arrest, right? But you're right. So I'm just clarifying that without having both parties or all parties come up to the same standard, it's not happening.
I would agree, and that's going to take some delicate negotiation. But
right.
I want to point out that the wording in the ordinance on the road maintenance agreement and on the conservation easement both say acceptable to the town council. They have some political discretion.
You guys do.
The planning, if we don't like what you've proposed, the strongest thing we can do is to send it to town council with a recommendation to deny. I don't want to go there.
No, because the opposite is true too, right? Like you have the ability with wiggle room to figure out how to help make it work as well.
That's right. So as far as why we're calling this a conceptual, it's because you're not complete. You're not complete because things like easement agreements aren't in place. Let me just quickly glance down. So easement agreements definitely are an issue. The road maintenance agreement has to be something we could recommend to the town council.
Okay, well, do you have any problems with the one that's in this proposal?
I have serious problems that the way you worded it is an invitation to disputes. And we have a comment from Eric Filer now that's been submitted in writing confirming that that's going to be an area for disputes. So if you submit with what you've got as a road maintenance agreement, with each party being responsible for their own section, my vote would be to recommend the town council deny the application.
We're not suggesting it that way.
Typically, for something like this, if it's a private street, there is set up a homeowners association with governing, with organizing documents, bylaws,
which we have.
There's voting procedures.
Right, which is all there in the CCR. Have you read that?
I've read those CCRs. It does not I don't think that it's adequate as written. I would not buy a lot in that subdivision with such a vague road maintenance agreement, because I would know that within 2 or 3 years, we're going to have neighbors suing each other.
But what about the road, the conservation easement and the association is taking care of all that with the land preservation, not the homeowners?
I won't argue with you about what you've got there. The burden is on you to convince us that you've complied with the ordinances and state law.
Correct. That's why I'm citing them. I believe that's what we're doing, and I'm trying to figure out where we're not.
As I said, since this is a conceptual discussion, I can offer an opinion, and my opinion is that the road maintenance agreement is not sufficiently detailed and does not really address inequities between lots 14 and the lots that are existing properties on 1600 South. But in any case, they are going to, I'm not really the one that has to be convinced. You have to convince them to sign off and agree to this.
Agreed. We're working on that. I don't think that's the problem. I'm only talking about the things that we can control here, because we're trying to be productive. We have spent a lot of money and time to create a conservation agreement, and if we can get consensus on that, that'll make it a lot easier to get agreement from other owners to adopt something as well, which is ultimately going to benefit everybody.
Okay, so on the conservation agreement, the advice I've been given by people who know more than I do about these things is that usually that agreement is between you as the owner and a land trust like Utah Open Lands, who can provide advice on how to structure that. That may be stricter than necessary. If Mark McKiff tells us that that's stricter than necessary, I'll follow his opinion. But from the people I've talked to, that's the normal way that one of these is done, is that a land trust is an involved party, which I don't see in your application.
Because that's not what the ordinance says. We're just going directly to the ordinance. We're paying legal to follow the letter of the law, and we're combing through
the ordinance says two things. It has to comply with the state law, which does apply a land trust, and it has to be acceptable to the town council, which has political discretion.
Right. So then why not make the ordinances match the state? It'd be a lot easier. You know, like we're getting emails that say one thing that contradict what the state says, which contradicts what the town says. I'm trying to help everybody here point these things out. I'm not being adversarial. I'm saying, look at it. We can read it word for word. There are problems here that are not being addressed. And I'm not going to keep going back and just trying to convince everybody. Like, I'm doing it right now in front of you. I'm saying, like, look at it right here. This is a clear case where it's black and white. I can point it directly to you, and we can talk about it or we not. But like, how do we get this to, how do you want to improve this? Like, I'm trying to help.
I don't think we want to argue too much longer. I think we can send these comments via April. We can offer to have a separate special meeting with you. We can have put you on that future agenda if you want to continue this discussion. But for example, on this, I would say, with your permission, we can send what you have on the conservation easement to Mark McKim, the town's attorney, and ask for his opinion whether that is adequate or whether we should be requiring something more.
That'd be wonderful. I would consent to that.
Great. Then number two is that we can't look at a preliminary until we have all the neighbors sign off on the road till those signatures are in. So that's
sure. Yeah, we're only talking concept here, right? So on a concept B, the same ordinance for preservation. The next question I'd like everybody to kind of give me some guidance on the concept here is ownership of open spaces. The ownership of any open space area shall be in single ownership. I take that to be one human or one entity. Is that correct?
That probably is what it says.
And it says, and may be owned and maintained by one of the following individuals or entities: homeowner association. I would take that to be a Utah legal homeowner. I don't know where that's defined, but I'm assuming it's a legal form you fill out and get a homeowners association. It might be helpful if that were some guidance we could get. A land trust, same thing. Conservation organization, government agency, or private individual. Right now, I'd put it in my name as the individual, And I would like to know if that would work, a single ownership of a private individual, myself, for right now.
I would say what we've agreed to is the way to go forward. We submit those documents to Mark Bishop and ask him to provide an opinion whether he would recommend the town approve it.
Okay. Would it be acceptable to maybe work with him with our council so they can wrap it up together and make it more effective?
That's even better.
Okay.
That's exactly how the process should work.
That sounds good. And the rest of this, I think, it would be nice. One other thing that might be helpful here is just clarity in the process. The way I interpret this is that once the town council does approve, assuming that they do approve a final application,
your terminology is incorrect. This is that what you need to clarify. The preliminary application, once we recommend to the town council to approve it, that is what gives you the authorization to begin work on the ground. The final
correct
does not come until all the infrastructure is complete.
That was my question. So for the record, you are saying, let me just make sure I got this right, because I don't want to save you the time. If we spent the $700,000 that's been quoted to put the water in, all the rest with Garcana, all the rest with the roads, and got 90% there, had an 80-acre lot, 90% there, $1 million in, ran out of money, it's possible that we would not get a subdivision done, right?
So the choices, and this is an interesting one, you can either do what exactly you said. You just start spending your money, and if you run out of money, you're in big trouble. Or you can get a performance bond to guarantee completion of the work. But the thing is that under our ordinances, you don't get a final approval until all the work is done and inspected. But if you want to do it in phases, you do have the option of getting a performance bond so that if you sell off two lots and the roads never, and but don't complete the road, there's money outside of the town's budget to fix it.
But I don't believe you can sell until it's recorded legally. So my question is, do you record the lots legally as subdivided lots first, or do you do all of the development with the potential that they don't get approved as subdivides? It's a question of sequence.
I'm going to let an attorney rule on that.
Okay.
But at this stage, we can't get there because we have to have a hearing on the preliminary application, which gives you the right to begin the on-the-ground work.
Totally. I totally understand. I just would never start the work if I can't figure out that it's actually feasible. Right now, I think this is totally impossible. I don't think anybody's ever getting a subdivision like this done. And I'm just trying to figure out how it works because it's not clear. And I want to help people so that someday somebody can get through something that is clear.
Okay, Sean, I know you're a businessman. I've worked on permitting major projects. You know, this is where subdivisions are done all the time in the state of Utah. You need to hire professionals who know how to do a subdivision to advise you.
I am, and I understand that.
April O'Neill's a job to try to explain to you how to comply with our ordinances.
Well, when we're bringing it back and explaining it, but not just looking for confirmation, it does seem like it would help if there was an ongoing dialogue. So I think I'll take it up on the meeting because we were trying to get one of those before. And I hope we can just kind of open up the dialogue if we continue.
I think we've opened the dialogue now. As I say, I think I've said enough. I'm going to, I think we're getting down to more arguing. So if other planning commissioners have comments, but I think, the offer is for an on-the-ground meeting at your time, but right now you have some very major things, the biggest one being the landowner agreements that you have to figure out how to get done. And getting those landowner agreements done may affect all sorts of other documents.
You're right. And we're aware of that. We just wanted to continue with the process of having the meetings because it's very hard to get on these meetings. And it's not, there's no arguing, by the way. Guys, I'm part of the community. I care about everybody. I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm simply pointing things out that have been really painful and difficult with putting more resources than I ever thought you'd have to. And I think it's an opportunity to reflect and figure out how to improve it. But I have nothing else further.
I understand that, Sean. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah. It's all meant for just, if I'm just totally trying to be black and white for the sake of, it would be nice if we could refine this a bit. Any other questions for us?
Are you clear on the next step, Sean, about what we can pass and get information back to you from Mark McKiff?
Yep.
You can get that. You can get his contact from Peg, I'm sure. And then, John, you'll send him the list that has all the very clear indications of what it's going to take to allow us to review a preliminary application.
That would honestly be the best thing we could possibly get. If we were able to just kind of go back and forth an email, kind of checking the boxes, that would probably be the preferred method, quite frankly.
Right. And since that's April's job, what I will do is I'll forward my notes to April and she can send you that list. So that she's the party who's supposed to be in the loop. So let's keep her in the loop.
Yeah. You bet.
Okay, any other comments, Planning Commission? Sean, any last questions?
Hey, Sean, this is Peg. My thought is you may or may not get any response from Mark McKiff. He's the town attorney. I'm not sure how open he is to having a private citizen approach him. So I would suggest that, with your permission, I or one of the Planning Commission members send your... we're just talking about your conservation easement documentation, right? Or the
the interesting part about it, first of all, you have my consent. Thank you very much for help. And so the way that our attorney kind of put it all together is because you have to have an ongoing maintenance agreement and lockup on the road, which is where you typically put all the utilities and easements, and then also this conserved area, that you wrap them all together so that if you have a single entity and or an agreement with everybody with one owner or entity that manages all that to the specs. It's all in that one CCR. And we think it's really comprehensive. It's hard to know what you're missing without having somebody kind of go back and forth. So I would say it's really that. And then everything else, as far as like additional agreements for people who are not a part of this CCR, although they potentially could be, you know, there's a lot there we could work with people on. That's kind of separate, right? Because that's up to negotiation for each owner of the other roads and the other land. This is just related to, for the new lots coming in, and the way that we're committing to restricting the land and keeping up the maintenance on the road and the drainage and everything else. That's all in one covenants agreement. And that's the one that if we could say, yep, that will work, right? That has nothing to do with current landowners. That would be completely up to new lot owners, which is why I don't think it should be a holdup, because it won't get signed until after all this is built anyway. It just needs a yes or a no.
So it's the CCR documentation that needs to be sent to Mark McKiff.
Right. Then separate to that, then we have, if there's any question, I think the biggest one being on the 1600 South section that we don't own. And once people agree, sure, we don't have any problem with your plan, do we have any requirement? Do they have any requirement to bring up that road to some standard as well or not? That's a bit unclear, but that seems like it should be in the ordinance, because I think it'd be make it easier for everybody to understand.
So Sean, as a procedural thing, I think what we're going to do, we will be sending, probably send your entire package to Mark McKiff, because some things refer to other pages.
Yep.
With a list of questions, we will send that through Peg or April through the town attorney. If you would furnish either Peg or April or both the name of your legal counsel who you want to have be able to answer questions or negotiate wording of a clause, could you send that?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so then we'll transmit all that from the town officers or the town staff to the town attorney with a list of questions, so he isn't overwhelmed with what are we asking.
For sure, yeah. And then one other unrelated question, just concept related, and then I'm done, I'll let you guys go, is after all this being said and everybody's had a lot of time to think about this and look at it, I'm curious, knowing that it's not going to help with affordable land to do the conservation, yeah, you know, like for a simple example, if 80 acres were split into 5-acre lots as the normal standard process has been in the past, 5-acre lots for homes, that's 16 lots. The math I'm doing, it turns out to be a lot better off for us economically to do that than to try to preserve this land. It's because it's not serving any benefit other than locking up the land and driving the price up. And I feel like maybe if we split that out and say, hey, this has nothing to do with affordable lots, because you'd need these to be 1.2 or lower, like probably more like 1-acre, 1/2-acre lots to make them affordable by the time you restrict that much land. Just doing the same math. I'm curious, you know, is there a benefit for the town to, or for us to be thinking about how to do affordable lots? And, or like we said, or should we kind of just, because we've been thinking like, man, we should just go back to 5-acre lots. Like, this is not worth the hassle, unless there's going to be a benefit for the town.
John, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is exactly the kind of discussions we've been having with Lee Nellis, that if we're going to get owners, with people with property, to create affordable lots, we have to allow them incentives, which is probably exactly the sort of thing that you're putting numbers out there, that to have affordable lots, we have to change the ordinances. But that's probably, at the rate Boulder moves, that's at least 6 months down the road.
Right.
But maybe that's the other way to go, is to say that you work with us to figure out how to amend the ordinances to create affordable housing incentives that a property owner would respond to. And, you know, in the end, that's very much the same thing I said to Rachel, that, you know, if we're going to improve our ordinances, we need the property owners at the table to give us input about what makes sense and what they would respond to do things that the town wants them to do.
Right. So here's just my 2 cents. Like, for example, instead of doing 55-45 on the conservation with 2.5-acre lots on a cluster, imagine if you did 25-75 on, say, 1/2-acre lots. So you have a little tiny corner, a lot more land preserved. People have more open space around them, but there's less people, but each lot's way more affordable, right? Like, the real affordability is going to come from the smaller lots using land that normally wouldn't have been as developable, but you find a really creative way to make it a great space to live that everybody likes. Just doing the conservation cluster, it's kind of mixing two concepts together, really, right? And so, like, maybe one other idea just to think on, we could come back, and I'm open to make time for this. What if you could restrict land on a different parcel? It would, and then cluster on two different lots. They don't have to be subdivided together. For example, if we went and said, hey, out of 500 acres, there are certain lots that just, they should never be developed and nobody would want to, be too painful, but let's restrict them and lock them up forever up against the ledges of the, you know, the Grand Staircase or whatever. And then over here, we found a very small cluster. It makes a ton of sense where you could have a couple beautiful little spots that are affordable that you'll never see. They're not on the side of a hill or anything like that. Like, I think there's much more creative ways to achieve affordable housing and clustering, with just a little bit of a tweak here, now that I've gone through the process.
I totally agree with you. I mean, what you're talking about is something Lee Nelson brought up, your transfer of development rights, that you may want to put this entire 80 acres at conservation easement.
Right.
The town would give you the right to do high density development on something closer to the road where it's easier to develop.
Yeah, exactly. You know, off the hidden path, easier to develop, better for the people living there. You know, so I think in that light, those are just some of that's kind of my high level feedback that I'd be happy to make time to help work on if it's possible.
I would be delighted. We've got that housing forum coming up in November, but the follow-up of that is going to be some focused work groups. And I think an important work group that we need to have is, I'll call it a housing providers work group. People with land, people with development experience, who could help us come up with creative ideas so that the ordinances incentivize the things that the town wants to have happen. Mm-hmm. So yes, I would welcome your participation. And I think that, leaving it on that note, we've made a very successful conversation.
Yeah, sorry to run so late, but I really appreciate it. And thank you for hearing me out. It's all intended for just being able to get productive here.
Great, thank you, Sean.
if anybody needs, we're always available. Thank you very much. I'll go offline now.
Certainly.
Do we have HLA ordinances in our
No.
Because he was talking about it.
There's a whole section of state law that governs HOAs.
Right.
How they need to be organized, what the bylaws can
do. So they have to organize it.
At this point, that's what the because it's a state corporation.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move out of this discussion and move on to our almost last discussion and discuss the community housing forum. Nice segue from the end of that last conversation. So I think, Tina, I'll turn that over to you, perhaps.
Thanks,
John. Go ahead, Matt. John's just excusing himself to get a drink of water.
Okay. Tina, can I turn over the housing forum to you?
Right, John and I have been talking, and he came up with something he sent out to everyone, I think.
Yeah.
Basically, we've got Charlene Wild, who's willing to come and talk about the different affordable housing projects that she helped in, I believe it's Tropic and also Escalante, and how that goes, how, you know, what different things need to be put together. And I believe lots of grants and coordination with county, town, and her organization, but she'll have all that information for us. And then the other person that's willing to speak would be on the USDA program in that state, Conine. And the plan is to get together with them now that they've committed and come up with a list of everything that they need, or they're going to speak about, and get that information to the town council, I'm assuming. I mean, I think that's, I'm saying the right thing here. The plan is to have John do a presentation at the town council so that we get everyone on board there, and also to ask Jimmy Catmull if he would be interested in also participating as a town council member.
It has salt, and I said send my
and what else?
So then towards the end of this, really good work. And I like how it's shaping up. And towards the end, there are a bunch of actionable items. So what do we need to do to move forward? And how can we discuss and help right now to organize that?
I think what they'll be helpful right now tonight, I've got that big questions, but if people on planning commission or in the public have other questions that they think really need to be on the presentation for the first meeting, since it's for education, let's bring up those questions. Any questions you've got?
Regarding the housing forum?
Yeah, I mean, adding to this list of big questions.
My
feeling on this first meeting is that what we really want to do is talk about what has worked in other communities, what can we learn from successes that have taken place. So, but you know, if there's boulder specific issues that people want to put on the topic for the meeting, our speakers will be better prepared.
Ted, can you mute Rachel?
I'm not sure. I'll hop in there.
Okay.
Thanks. I thought that was background noise from the hall. These are the questions that you've, these are the important questions you've talked about, and you want our feedback, John, is if you think these are the right ones, you want more, less, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, we're going to give this list to the speakers and say, you know, these are the things we'd like to, you know, hear about. I think I've hit the major topics. But if not, I think the next thing would be just kind of the consensus from the Planning Commission that I'll make a presentation along these lines to the town council and get any input that they have. Because I think ultimately all this is about changing ordinances, which is town council's job. So we don't want to be in front of them.
Okay. And so I just have one question here. And did you address the issue of housing that already exists in town that's not rentable, or, you know, existing empty housing?
I'll make you a note of that right now. Existing housing.
I think there's some information that we got in a survey from 2014 that includes that.
Great.
And I think Charlene also will do a whole presentation on that as well.
Okay. Gotcha.
I was going to say, basically, I sent this email to her just to give her an idea of what was on the agenda, and she'll be keeping in touch with us.
Right.
Great. Thanks, Colleen. So for a first item of business on this, I don't know if I need to make a motion, but is the PC good with John presenting this information to the town council in the October meeting?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I am too.
One of the things too on this is time frame. Like the time as far as how long you want your speakers to speak. So they have.
Yeah, they have that mapped out already on this document a little bit. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Maybe I didn't. Okay. Very good. So I guess we'll get some town council input at the beginning of October, and at our October meeting, we could talk about starting to get out publicity about the meeting, and any other meeting logistics stuff that we need to get set up.
I would like to actually get some real broad information to the public as soon as possible with a flyer and also on Pegboard, just to say that this is happening. And encourage people to come.
Yeah. So Tina, I wonder, would it be valuable to, is this the time to get some volunteers and start a working group? Would that be helpful or more work at this point?
I think when John and I talked about that there's going to be a lot that comes out in the meeting itself and discussion with people who actually come to the meeting. So I think it is I know I've been talking to people I know who are interested in certain areas, but I think it is going to be good to have this meeting to really pinpoint places that, you know, people agree we should be talking about right up front.
Okay. But I guess I was being more specific. Do you need a working group of people to help you plan for the meeting?
Well, I think we'll invite a couple of things. Tina and I have talked about. I love Tessa Barkin's writing. I don't think she's on the Zoom. If she is, she can weigh in. But I would love to invite her to write an article for The Insider about housing in Boulder.
Great.
Get something out. So we definitely could ask for some volunteers as we get closer to working on specifics. Right now, I think the big accomplishment is we got some good speakers lined up.
Definitely, yeah. So when it comes to meeting logistics set up in Zoom, is that, Peg, are you able to do that, or is there certain specific people who have the know-how to get all that stuff running?
I would need to know more about what room you want to be in and the format of the meeting. Like if it's one person, like a bunch of people listening to a speaker, or are there multiple tables people are moving around in? I can't answer the question without knowing more of your format.
Okay.
I think it'll be pretty much like a planning meeting that we would have the speakers, but then you know, we've left, well, I think we'll start with the open an open house for format, you know, just, which unfortunately won't allow much electronic participation. Then about 7 o'clock, start the formal meeting with speakers, followed by question and answer, very much like we do the planning meeting. And I think here's the way we're going to do it.
Okay.
I have something to, as far as this meeting going on, I don't really see us getting groups together and talking about this until after the first of the year, to be really honest. Because this meeting is in November, it's November 17th, that we're actually going to be capturing all this information to give to groups. Like, we don't have that information right now. Is that, I mean, that's kind of how I feel. And that, to be really honest, I see this groups coming together after the first of the year once we have this information. Does that make sense to you, Matt?
Yeah, certainly. And I was sort of heading in a different direction, but yeah, no, I think this is the introductory sort of meeting, and then it defines what happens in 2023, how to take it forward. You know, so, but my question now, and what I want to focus on now, is what, you know, Tina and John, you two having taken on this meeting, what can we do as the PC to help support and make it happen in the next month?
I think we need a work meeting.
I think, good idea. Tina just said we should probably have a work meeting just to discuss this in depth within the Planning Commission as a public meeting. The other thing that I think is going to happen that came out of tonight very unexpectedly is that I think if we start these dialogues with Sean Owen and with Rachel, that's going to help a great deal in terms of starting to identify what are the barriers that currently exist, and how can we make incentives for people to do things that would help create housing. So I'd love to think, we'll start that informal conversation and start getting them thinking and giving us some ideas.
I have a comment to make too. This is Colleen again. I think that we're in unprecedented times. I know that there's a lot of frustration with Sean. I think the economy, I think there's so many factors right now as far as we've been seeing the prices of land go up so high that we've never seen before. So we have a lot of factors that would have never played into this that are happening right now. And I think that's going to be one of the hard parts about us putting this together is all the factors that are going on around us in the country and in our own state and in our own county, as far as prices of things, materials, land, everything is a huge factor right now that we wouldn't have been looking at this 2 to 3 years ago.
Right. And all we can do is do our best to make it better in all the changing circumstances.
Exactly.
And now, you know, so I want to pin down a working meeting because that's what I've heard will help move this forward. Is the Planning Commission available on two Thursdays from now? What is that? September 22nd for a working meeting precisely and specifically on this topic.
Be here. I will not
this be here, but I can get here by Zoom, I guess.
Yes, this is Shelley Price Gibson. I wanted to just say we have taken a long time and lost a lot of our people that we represent, and maybe we better readdress this. Just what Colleen said is being public service like we are and volunteering and losing a lot of people that could have said something. We still have one lady that tried to comment earlier, and maybe we should talk about this kind of stuff after or something. I don't know. But okay. I'm just saying.
Well, this is part of the agenda, so we're going to finish it out here. And so my question is, from the rest of the commission, can anyone show up on September 22nd for a working meeting on this project?
I have another one.
I'll be there either in person or on Zoom.
Okay.
If we do it at the same time as this, like 7, I can do it.
Okay.
Is it possible to do it entirely by Zoom?
Yes.
Like as a procedural question.
Can we just do that? Can we have our public comments at the end of the meeting?
Okay.
We have public comments at the end of the meeting. You know.
Okay.
Meetings go on forever and ever and ever in big cities. Okay. You know.
Listen, we're in discussion here on the housing forum right now. Final public comments will come in a few minutes. Until then, we need to finish our business here.
Okay, so Tina made a motion to have a work meeting on the 22nd. I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Annie Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John, did you vote?
Yeah, John Barath, aye.
Okay, thank you. So we'll do that. So it'll be September 22nd, 7 p.m. Zoom format.
Okay.
1 hour.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see, being that it's getting here on to 9:30, I'd like to move on okay, here we are at final public comments. So are there any final public comments?
The bike's coming up.
Hi, say your name.
This is Blake Spalding, and I am one of the referenced neighbors on 1630. I don't live there, but it's my house. I am going to just say that I work nights, and the way my schedule is, I am always scheduled Tuesdays and Thursdays nights. It's not my choice. It's the choice of my staff. I have several married couples on staff that need days off. So it's very difficult for me to come to these meetings. I was contacted about a week ago. I can check the exact date with a very vague letter from a representative of Sean's, who's working for him, Stephanie Love, saying they were looking for this, that this was happening. It was the first I heard of it. So procedurally, like, it would have been awesome. And I am not like connected to gossip particularly. I work hard. I work really hard. I work a lot. So I would have loved to have known that this was coming for me, because I don't know. I like Sean. I've known him a long time, but I did hear him threaten a lawsuit tonight, saying that, like, if neighbors didn't comply with his choices, there would be lawsuits. And that is feels really uncomfortable and disturbing to me. And I hope Sean's still on. And I wonder what my choices are. Like, I've never been in this situation. I've never had someone say that a road should be made on my property that's substantially larger. The road that I have is sufficient for my needs. I bought the property long ago. I believe it was 2006. We have worked and spent money fixing up that dirt road. It is fine for me. But like, I don't see any advantage to me in particularly saying yes to just give away a vast swath of my property in order to have a ton of traffic. And I'm just really confused. And so I guess I'm wondering, the procedural question is, who do I request a meeting with on the council to find out what my options are? Because I'm not really interested in a lawsuit, and I'm not really interested in doing this. I'm sorry. It's better for me if the property stays intact, because anyone who's gonna subdivide in 5 acres is gonna have the exact same problem, I would think. So I would rather see someone, if they have to sell it, and I was hoping it was gonna be like affordable. Then I could see like doing the teeny thing and being like, yes, I will donate for affordable, but knowing that it's gonna be finance things, it doesn't, like, I'm confused and I'm concerned, and now I'm feeling low-key stressed.
Yeah.
Because I really just found out about this a week ago, and I would think that somebody might have, hopefully Sean, you're still here, it would have been polite to let me know when this was starting.
Yeah, well, I would share with you, Tina, you mentioned these environmental conflict resolution resources that the law school has, and maybe at some point we're going to need to bring in some kind of facilitator to help smooth this out. But, you know, essentially,
you, Catherine Smith, Eric Filer,
and Matt and Caitlin
are property owners there. You have certain rights. It's really almost a business negotiation situation that if Sean wants something from you, he has to offer something to you to make you want to agree with him. So
what I heard him saying is they're working on it, but I literally got contacted a week ago with a very vague letter. So I have to make a comment.
If you watch this meeting, basically there's still a lot that needs to be done. And that's what we're telling Sean basically. And it took up a lot of the meeting, and that's why we're here late, is because we're arguing and discussing things. And so we can't get any farther until Sean does what we're asking him to do, basically, and the relationship that we have with the zoning administrator and whatever. And so your best thing to do is, I think Daniel Kennedy went through this too. Daniel Kennedy put a road because nobody would give him an easement, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Okay, nobody gave him an easement, so he had to create his own road. So that's the only thing I'm going to say to you.
Thank you. Yeah, and I want to be a good neighbor. I just like hearing how stressed Sean is about how much money he's already put in and people working 50 hours. Like now I feel a little leveraged, like I'm going to be the bad guy if it's not in Jen and my best interest to donate land. And I'm not in a position to donate because. So anyway, I ran into Tom Hoyt at the restaurant last night and I was like, I just found out about this. I need to go to this thing. The restaurant's busy. Where Ray went was to my restaurant because Lacey needed to call the police. Mm. And so, you know, it's very tricky for me to leave and these are at night and I'm sorry I'm not here more. And I want to do the right thing by the town. And anyway, Sean, we should probably have, I don't want to have to pay a lawyer to represent myself in this because I don't have that money. So threatening lawsuit really gives me heebie-jeebies. So anyway, I'm wicked uncomfortable. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Blake, I have a couple comments regarding it being hard to get here and notice of everything. Just so you know, in our ordinances, Sean's requirement to give you notice is 10 days before the public hearing because his application hasn't been complete until this point. We haven't had a public hearing yet. So that is his obligation to you. My suggestion to you, since I understand that you work these nights and it's hard to get here and it's hard to stay in tune with everything, and Peg could give you more details on this, I believe. American Legal is where we have our ordinances published. And I think it's with them or it's somewhere through the state that you can register for like alerts of the meeting. So basically they come out to you even before the PEG board does and stuff and lets you know what's coming up and what's on the agenda, I believe. And so that could help you just at least get those emails and scan through and make sure any of your neighbors are on or whatever. And PEG could help you with that.
I appreciate that. It's and just like a little bit that ship has already sailed. And I really swear on my love for all that is good and holy, I had no idea that I had not heard one thing about this until a week ago or whenever I got the vague email saying this is what's happening. And so then I got on the website and I was like, oh wow, 87 pages. I'm pretty busy right now. I scanned, but like I'm a little flummoxed that I didn't know about it before all this. Millions of hours and dollars were invested in this process.
We are flummoxed too.
That helps. I really appreciate and thank you for letting me have a question. And thank you for doing it. Thanks for coming tonight.
Yes, thank you.
I know it wasn't easy. Thank you so much. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other final public comments from the room or online?
Yes, I have one, Peg. Can I go ahead?
Go ahead, Peg.
Just to clarify briefly, you're kind of mixing things up a little bit, Elena. The Utah meeting notice board is for agenda going out primarily and minutes being posted. The only requirement for that is 24 hours before a meeting, same as regular open meetings. So that's not going to give Blake the advance information she needs, but going to our town website, boulder.utah.gov, planning commission page, all the materials related to this project are always posted, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions about process. So I would tell anyone here, your first place to go is our town website, the planning commission page, the meetings, agenda recordings section that will give details and meeting materials relative to every single meeting and what's coming up.
Yeah.
And thanks, Ben.
And thank you for the great job you did. And that reminded me, I wanted to just bring up in the open meeting here, I've discussed this with Peg and Matt individually, that I think we should set a policy that we lock in the agenda basically the Friday before our meeting, which gives everybody plenty of time to read the materials. And
John, let's talk about that in the upcoming business.
Okay, sounds good. We have a comment here.
Any other final public comments?
We have one. This is Jennifer Bach. I was just looking back at the last couple of planning commission meetings and didn't find the audio recordings of the Zoom or anything that we're doing. I'm curious if there's a different place we can find them.
You have to go to the bottom of the page. Peg, can you
scroll down? Hold on a second. You just scroll down to the bottom of the meeting page and the audio recording is there. I usually put it up the day after the meeting.
So I see a black bar that says audio recording, but it says 0 minutes to 0 minutes. Is that
on
something
black one?
I'm looking at July right now. And it was for also August. It has 0 minutes to 0 minutes.
I listened to August.
I didn't press the button because we're sitting here in the meeting hall.
Press play, I just looked. It does show 0 to 0. And then once you press play on July, it loads to 1 hour, 27 minutes, 27 seconds.
Perfect. Thank you.
That was a short one.
Like this one will be. Can I make one quick clarification also? Sean, you are not the one responsible to sending out those notifications to the landowners. When finally April deems the preliminary application ready for public hearing, I'm required to give a 10-day written notice to all the nearby landowners within 300 feet, I guess. You've provided me the addresses for that. I'm the one who sends out those letters. So you do not have to do that.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's helpful.
Thanks for clarifying those things, Peg. I apologize for misspeaking.
Okay, any other final public comments?
Don't see any in the room.
Okay, I'll take that as a no. Then we're going to move on to upcoming business for October. So John, you would like to request some time for discussing a 7-day policy or for paperwork in?
It would be appropriate for us to tell Peg and April that unless it's a bona fide emergency, we don't add last minute items to the agenda. That way we can come to the meeting much better prepared. And I don't know. So I think some people tend to do planning commission stuff on weekends, some during the week. So, I think, closing the agenda 7 days before is not unreasonable.
We've gotten better at that. And do we need to write a policy for that or how do we attend to that?
I think we just, in the minutes, indicate that, tell Peg and April that that's our policy. If somebody asks on Wednesday afternoon, or Wednesday morning, can I still get on the planning commission agenda? We say no.
And all of those comments that come at the end in comments will be where they can have their say or whatever.
Yeah.
How does the rest of the PC and Peg feel about that?
I'm fine with that. I agree. I like having as much information as I can as soon as we can. It's hard when stuff comes in, even 1 or 2 days, if you're working and you're trying to study things.
So were you saying freeze it by the weekend, basically, meeting on Thursday by Saturday? Is that what you were saying?
Friday.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. Either way.
If you said by the end of the day, Friday, that would give us basically 6 days to the meeting to.
And this is for agenda, correct?
Yeah, for new agenda items.
Okay.
I'd like to add one thing to that. There's always, well, today, in fact, there were like, what, two or three rather substantive documents to be uploaded to the website. I don't know if anyone had a chance to review them. Just documents coming in at the last minute also is a little problematic. So I don't want to do a hard and fast deadline thing, but just as a procedure, it would be nice to have all the documentation related to the agenda in hand that I can actually get it posted like 3 days before the meeting.
Even three's better than.
Yeah.
So like Monday.
Yeah, because right now I think we say that somewhere on the site we say that you'll accept comments and post them on the website up to 24 hours before. You know, if it's 24 hours before, I've got a chance to look at it before the meeting rather than it be brought to the meeting. So I think some flexibility there. If the item's on the agenda, then comments relevant to that agenda item, I would leave to your discretion.
I only put that 24-hour thing because I didn't want to guarantee to anybody I could get it uploaded, you know, like on the day of. I mean, it pretty much means I have to be sitting by my computer all day Thursday to upload documents coming in. So I didn't want to guarantee to anybody writing a comment that it would be posted. It's not that they couldn't have said it, but it just wouldn't have made it onto the website. So.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I think we can leave it to Peg and April to use a judgment on that. But we prefer the 7 days or 6 days.
Yeah, great. For the agenda.
For new agenda items.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so for upcoming business for October, we're going to have, well, we don't know what we're going to have by way of subdivisions at this point. We do know that we'll tentatively schedule Ray in for an amended CUPA application and public hearing. That would be one. We'll wait on Sean and Rachel.
I'm assuming Lee might want to have his session. He was here for most of the meeting and might have some helpful comments on what he heard.
Yeah, we should maybe have a check-in with Lee on stuff. Then we'll need some time to discuss the housing forum. And although we're going to have a working meeting in between, I imagine that we'll be on the next step by that meeting.
Yeah. This is Elena. Peg, can I ask you a procedural question?
Yep.
When we get those comments via email, like Eric Filer's and stuff, are we required to or supposed to read those for the record? Like, should we have read those tonight? Or are we not supposed to do that?
I'm not sure there's a real clear, I mean, if it's a public hearing, yes. This was not a public hearing that they were commenting on specifically, the Filer and Hoyt comments. So they become a matter of public record in the sense that they're on our website and available for the public to look at. And I think that maybe to whatever extent those comments are germane when the public hearing happens, they should be considered part of that. So
okay.
I don't think there was a requirement to read them tonight. They are available on the web.
Okay, but it is required when there's a public hearing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, what, any other items for October agenda?
That's all right. Peer Ranch comes up with more information, we can't do that until it's in the preliminary.
You know, unless he abuses it, I'd like to give him as many conceptual discussions as he wants. If he wants to come with hopefully more like 10 or 15 minutes, not like it went tonight, but
right.
If he's got some specific questions, I think it's appropriate to entertain them. But you know, we don't go into the formal review and hearing on a preliminary application until it's 100% complete. I'm going to suggest, I might work a little bit with Lee Nellis about subdivision ordinance and affordable housing, and maybe out of that, he'll want to make a presentation. So, but I guess that we've already got Lee Nellis check in, but I think so, I'll be doing some conversation with him in the next couple of weeks. Because I think a lot of things have been brought up that I'd like to get his feedback on.
He gave us.
So you'll detail that conversation with Lee for discussion in October.
Did everyone get a chance to read his memo? It was the end of August. We didn't even talk. You know, we didn't even talk about that.
Okay, yeah, that's true. We can go back.
Well, yeah, you're right, Colleen. We've been so busy that haven't prioritized that. So let's put that on the October agenda.
On his August memo.
Is that the development memo? I can't remember how.
Yeah.
I think I actually have it on the website in case we wanted to talk about it. So
and you did have it.
Yeah, and I think since Sean and Rachel are on the thing, you know, if they want to schedule a special meeting, they should get that request to us in time for the October. You know, if they have a date, time, and that they want to do an on the ground meeting or something, just bring us that request. I see Rachel's waving her hands.
I'm listening.
But.
I'm hoping for some back and forth through email just a little bit first, and then it'll make sense to plan a meeting. And I hear what you're saying about timing. So I'll.
Okay. Yeah. I think some off the line informal discussion will help on both of those.
That would definitely help me. I appreciate that, John. Thank you.
Let me know when you're in Boulder.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to be there in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Great. I'd like to make a motion to close the meeting. That's Colleen Thompson.
Second, Thaddeus and Hughes.
All in favor?
You don't have that. Matt, you're muted.
Oh. Matt Cochran, aye.
Eileen Hughes, aye.
Peter Carlson, aye.
Doug Rath, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Good night.
All right, thanks.